Good day, everyone. This is Kevin Finkel here, and I'm here with another episode of Magic, the First Pioneers. On this podcast, we talk all about the Pioneer Magic format to keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer.
And I am your co-host from Japan, Ryan Schwenk. I'm coming to you live from Yokohama, which is next to Tokyo.
We usually just say Tokyo, but we make fun of it a lot. We make fun of you for having to always specify that it's not actually Tokyo.
Nobody from New Jersey actually says they're from New Jersey. They say they're from New York. So I'm from Tokyo. Yeah.
All right. Well, what we are talking about is really the last part of what I do in our introduction, and that is what is powerful in Frontier. So we haven't done this in a little while where we really talk about the meta. So we want to go over what some of the recent results have been, you know, the starting impact of what the new set has been, and just kind of talk about what's powerful, especially with some big tournaments coming up. You've got a GP there in Japan. There's a GP in the United States for Pioneer. So we're going to have some big events coming up, and we'd like to, if you're listening, be able to kind of predict what you might see in those tournaments, what are probably going to be the top decks, what to prepare for, and, you know, just give you a brief overview of the meta in case you're missing anything. You know, changes pretty quickly, and I think that that's really interesting about Pioneer, but if you've been gone for a few weeks, you might have to catch up because there's some new decks and there's some new power.
So when was the last time we talked about the meta at all? Was that like right after the bans probably?
Yeah, I think that was the last time we really went a little bit deep on meta. I mean, we talked about what the impact of some of the new cards were with our set review, which was the two-parter that we'd done the last 2 weeks with our guest. But we didn't talk, you know, hard data about what's been coming out for the meta, and I think that's what we really wanted to do today.
Yeah, and I mean, we really couldn't do it before anyways because, you know, none of the new cards were going to, you know, be played yet, so we had no idea what the meta was going to look like, plus... You know, with the bannings and stuff like that, we're not sure like how it was going to settle. So yeah, this is a perfect starting point for delving deep into the metagame.
All right, so when we talk about the metagame, one thing that I always like to do is not just talk, hey, these are the decks, but I like to give a little bit of the, you know, the history, the why these are the decks that are strong right now. Mm-hmm. That way you can really understand the decks in context. So talking about what we saw coming into this new meta, which is the set that we just got released.
It's not Theros Beyond Death.
It's Theros Beyond Death. Yeah, like it also has a T in it. Okay, Theros Beyond Death, the new meta. So we came in and we were kind of starting to see Mono Black and Mono Red as the two biggest decks in the format. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we were at the start of this meta. And what they were really doing is they seemed to be kind of racing to be more and more mid-range. Mm-hmm. So they were really leaning hard on all of those utility lands they get from being a monocolored deck. So they got the full Mutavaults. They would often get, you know, Castle Lochthwain or the Rummin' Up Ruins or the Red Castle. And really going hard on those. And I think that gave them a lot of reach, a lot of power, as well as a lot of creatures that just really stick around. So out of the red deck, I think in particular... A lot of natural two-for-ones, like the Stompy Giant, they had Chandra, they had Glorybringer, all of those kind of were natural on-the-board two-for-ones.
So I think they were, I mean, basically they were trying to beat mid-range, and that's why they wanted to get more resilient threats.
Well, to me, I think they both were mid-range decks. You know, the black one was a little bit more aggro. They were playing one-drops, you know, usually the Vampire and the 2-1 Bloodsoul Champion and...
The Vampire Knight, right? The
Knight of the Ebon Legion, yeah.
Yeah, the Ebon Hand guy, whatever his name is.
Yeah, so they, you know, they had some aggression, but I don't think that they were, to me, what is it, like a full aggro deck. They were doing a lot of trading speed for card quality, and to me that's what really defines mid-range. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to have those really big bombs, and I think both those decks were doing that.
So just kind of like in general, I would say this new format, or sorry, this new metagame so far, it really seems like combo has come into its own. It wasn't really there before. You know, we had the Disc Ascendancy.
I'm definitely going to, I think there definitely is some combo. You know, at the end of kind of the last season, we were saying there's down to maybe one real combo deck.
Yeah.
And then I think Lotus Storm was really starting to show its head. These couple of mid-rangey decks. Those were kind of the two dominating the format. And here's where I want to talk the story is they hit a wall with a new deck that came out. And that really was the five-color Niv-Mizzet deck.
Yeah. Well, that's so mid-range now, right? It's not really combo.
So, This isn't the combo deck. It's a mid-range deck to beat all mid-range decks, really. So the black and the red, they were kind of racing their way up the top, you know, trying to get 2-for-1s with things like Chandra, and then this Niv-Mizzet comes down, and it's like a 5-for-1, a 6-for-1. So if you guys haven't seen that deck, you know, it manages to play 5 colors. It plays Bring to Light. Bring to Light can then find the 5-color Niv-Mizzet, and that can draw you a whole ton of cards from your deck, because you've got cards of all of those color combinations, pretty much.
So, I mean, we'll probably talk about this later anyways when we're talking about, like, you know, how to prepare for, you know, this metagame. But when we were a Frontier podcast, we always kind of talked about stuff like Hushwing Griff. And I'm wondering if that actually might be a good card now for decks to play against that Niv-Mizzet deck to stop them from getting all that value.
I've definitely thought about how we can play. I think it's Hushbringer is the new 2-mana one, the 1/2 lifelink fairy, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. Definitely looking for places to play that. I tried like a mono white flyers deck and it was straight trash, so don't do that.
Yeah. And we get devotion stuff. So.
That's something we'll always be happy to do on this podcast. And if you ever talk to me as a player, I'm always happy to tell you, like, I test everything, and I am very happy to tell you when I test something and it's bad. So don't try Mono White Flyers. It's not really a deck.
So do you want to start off maybe by just talking about the MTGO metagame? I think someone just posted it on, was it
Yoman? You know, I would rather, let me finish story time just a little bit. Because I'm kind of, you know, giving the whole reason why what we're currently seeing is happening. So we had those two main decks and they were trying to, you know, go bigger and go bigger and kind of go over the top with some card advantage, with card value. And then they hit this wall of the Niv-Mizzet 5-color Bring to Light decks. Mm-hmm. And they can't compete in that field anymore in trying to be the most mid-range deck in the format. Yeah. So that really shook things up. So I think that opened up room for people to go underneath those decks, for them to need to go underneath those decks. So we're starting to see some real changes in the meta. We're seeing some more tempo decks showing up that I'm definitely going to want to talk about. I think we are seeing the world open up for some combo decks that are able to go over Niv-Mizzet. I think the ramp decks somewhat as well. Although that is a matchup I've been meaning to test a lot. So if you guys have data on that specific matchup, please tweet out at me because I don't know how Niv-Mizzet is against ramp and I don't have a good ramp player to play against right now.
I am. Anyways. I'm a good ramp player. Yeah.
Yes. Anyways. So red and black are no longer the two pillars in the format. There's some shakeup. Now we can go into kind of what we're starting to see with some actual lists.
Yeah. So do you want to start talking about the meta now?
Yeah, let's start talking about the meta. So, I mean, I will preface it by saying we are still seeing plenty of mono black aggro and, big red, chonky red. I think that those decks are starting to get a little bit faster. So the mono black aggros, we are seeing a little bit more on like the 1-drop, 2-drop side that I've seen. Mm-hmm. Still usually like Pack Rat, Scrap Heap Scrounger on 2. But like the red especially, we're seeing less Glorybringer. I think that's a really big changing point, is that Glorybringer was like the best card in Pioneer almost for a little bit there. And it's really hit a wall. It doesn't get through a 6-6 very well.
No.
There is removal that actually removes it, and it's just a tiny bit too slow to beat something like a Niv-Mizzet.
So, I mean, if you want to just talk about in general, like what decks are getting, you know, more popular, that's fine. But I wanted to take a look at some data we just got. Yoman Hernandez, I believe, from TCG Player, just posted a great article about the current state of Pioneer. And he also puts a MTGO Pioneer metagame list up on his latest article as well. So I think we should kind of go through that first, kind of talk about how, you know, what the metagame is like on MTGO. And I think we should preface this by, you know, kind of saying in the MTGO metagame, I usually don't think it's the same as what we'll see in paper. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I think it's not 100%. Everywhere you go, there's going to be regional favoritism to certain decks. Mm-hmm. You know, there's card availability that affects people differently in Magic Online versus paper, and just what people like to play sometimes is different. There's a few decks that are really very different to play in paper versus online.
And especially for somebody like me, that's Absolutely true with the regional favoritism. When you come to Japan, everyone's always like, well, Japan's playing some crazy decks. Japanese players really don't play MTGO at all. And they're like the second, it's the second biggest Magic the Gathering market like in the world. You know?
Yeah.
So, and I would say European players maybe a little bit as much, but there's just going to be so many more people that play Paper Magic that don't play MTGO. So these are a little skewed. But
okay.
But anyway, so I'll just go over the list real quick. Like you said, Mono Black Aggro, still like the deck to beat. That was like the highest metagame percentage. Metagame percentage, I believe it was 15%. And then Insol, Blue-Red Insol, is it Insol, is actually like 12% of the meta online now. That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, I mean, this is for a week of Pioneer metagames. I think this was the winners of the showcase, and... Yeah, so that's kind of going to what I'm saying, is I've found that tempo decks have a new beginning. So I think that the Is It In Soul decks kind of fit into that category for me, you know, being very aggressive to the point where they can get under something like Mono Red, Mono Black. And they also have just a little bit of disruption, which is what you really need to stop some of the combo decks and to stop the Niv-Mizzet decks. You know, that one counter spell in your deck might make the difference, you know, buying you a turn, something like that.
And plus, they have stuff really like Shrapnel Blast, so that they're really good against removal as well.
They are, and that also helps them go over the top, so they're not just walled by a 6/6.
Yeah.
Now, the other deck that really does that very well is the Spirits deck. Mm-hmm. So they're playing a lot of different disruptive spirits. They're playing the Selfless Spirit. They're playing the Spell Queller. All of those help to stop your opponent from getting to a way to just shut out the game, which is what... You know, something like Niv-Mizzet. I mean, I'm talking about that deck a lot, but I do feel like it had a very strong impact on the format. I think that these are also applicable to things like the blue-white control, to the combo decks, which also play a little bit of that controlling game and try and stabilize or just win.
Tempo's good. Tempo's definitely good. So yeah, we're going to list the spirits that we just talked about was like 11% of the online meta. Niv-Mizzet, which we just talked about, is like 10% of the meta. Azorius,
I think that's pretty strong.
Azorius Control is almost 7%. This is,
and I think that needs to be talked about because that was a deck that was very big before this format. So I don't think we should totally wash over it. You know, it was never dead. It was always strong. It feels a little shaky to me, but there's no strong reasoning why. I think there's maybe just a greater number of decks it needs to answer right this moment.
Well, plus it's a new metagame, and usually control decks don't do that well in a new metagame because we don't know what decks to really prepare for. This is probably going to get a larger piece of the metagame, you know, going towards the end of the season, I think.
Yeah, and they didn't get nothing. They did get Dream Trawler, which has been a nice addition to that deck.
And I said that was going to be like a popular card, if you guys remember from one of my, from our set review. So I actually got one right. It's so weird.
You got one. Yeah, we'll give you that.
After Azorius Control, White Devotion is showing up at about 7 or 8%, I guess.
All right, so let's take a minute and talk about combo decks, because I think that kind of leads us into what I've been mentioning, is that there are combo decks that are back, and there's kind of some new ones that have quite a lot of legs. So this is definitely one of them, is Mono White, you know, Ballista plus Heliod.
Mm-hmm.
And then you really need to back that up with a somewhat aggressive build. You need to back that up with a little bit of devotion so that Heliod isn't just a do-nothing card without the Ballista in play.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the mono-white decks are starting to do that and starting to get a little bit scary with it. So they've got a little bit of disruption as well. You know, some of those white, like the Alcide. Uh-huh. I don't know how they pronounce the white version of Dryads. That thing's pretty cool, given anything you have protection.
Mm-hmm.
They still get to play a few cards like that that really make it hard to disrupt this combo, so it's pretty cool there.
And they also have like a lot of enchantment, enchantment removal, which is really hard to get rid of for a lot of these decks out there now.
Yeah, you know, Mono Red, Mono Black certainly have a problem trying to get an enchantment off the board. You know, is it as well?
Yeah. So I could see this getting better, maybe growing a little bit more, getting a bigger share of the metagame going forward as it settles.
You know, it's pretty well known, but what I like about it is that it isn't a combo that gets beat by Graveyard Hate,
mm-hmm.
and it's also not a combo that gets beat by what we've been seeing a lot of is Damping Sphere and similar effects.
Yeah. It doesn't really play Nykthos, does it?
I have seen versions. I don't think that the more aggressive versions can afford to, because they're playing, you know, generally 7-8 one drops.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to do with a colorless land that doesn't tap for white on one.
Yeah.
Especially if you want white-white on two.
So, yeah, Ballista, I haven't been... I mean, I've played against it a few times online, but it hasn't seemed that fast, I would say. I'd say you still have time to kind of... react to these Mono White Devotions deck. It's not as powerful as other combos, just kind of win on the spot.
I mean, it can win on the spot, but I agree with you there.
Like, just getting the pieces together is kind of hard, I think. It's harder than the other decks, because you're not running,
it's
like...
It's not a Splinter Twin. I don't think it's anywhere close to ban-worthy. You know, plenty of decks here have game against it.
And speaking of Splinter Twin, like you said, the other combo deck, new combo deck in the format, blue-red Inverter.
I know you really want to talk about this one, because you were at the tournament where it really broke out.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the tournament results a little bit later, but, you know, this is kind of like the new hotness. Wins by playing the 6/6 Eldrazi that exiles your entire library and puts your graveyard on top. Your graveyard becomes your library. And then you play a Jace or a Thassazar Oracle, and then you have no library, so you win.
Yeah, and the deck wins surprisingly quickly sometimes. You know, it can go turn 4, turn 5, and just win like that. And it's definitely hard to interact with. You know, if they just play the Inverter and you don't have counter spells, you know, you have removal, you have whatever else. If they play the Inverter, boom, their deck's gone, and then at any time they can just play the Thassa's, and again, it's just an enter the battlefield, and they win often.
So it's a, like we said, like you said before, Splinter Twin. It's basically Splinter Twin. It's a combo that has, like, a control shell.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that it's tough to compare those exactly, but I think that the part that is valid about that comparison is that it takes up a very small amount of this shell, so the rest of the deck can really play like a true blue-black control deck.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so going to the next deck, and let's do a couple more
combo decks, just because we've been kind of referencing them. So I did bring up Damping Sphere, and the big reason why that was being mentioned is the Lotus Storm decks. So we've kind of got three versions of this now. So the original version we were seeing before the release of this set was a blue-red Lotus Storm, generally, and it would try and build up a huge amount of mana by repeatedly tapping and untapping its Lotus Field and Nykthos. What is the one that turns into Thespian Stage?
Yeah,
turn into a Lotus Stage. So you'll use those together and build up a huge amount of mana, and then usually like wish for an Omnipotence or like burn them out with a expansion explosion.
Yeah.
So there's a few ways to win with that, but the actual winning part was a little bit awkward. And now we're kind of getting two versions that are a little bit better. We're either seeing like a blue-red that uses the Underworld Breach. We talked about this a little bit on our set review, is that it's able to repeatedly play cards from their graveyard. There's actually a really, really weird enchantment that when you tap a land, you mill three cards.
Chronic Flooding.
So they put that on their... yeah. A card that no one really expected to be good, but they managed to play that and repeatedly fill their graveyard. It makes the Underworld Breach basically free because you're untapping your lands with it. And you just mill through your whole deck and play your win con, which is pretty cool.
How many of these cards, like back when, you know, during like, you know, Ravnica, Standard, and whatever, all these cards that are sitting playing, how many cards you just probably just threw away?
Yeah, you know, definitely some of them. I know I've got a foil Inverter of Truth somewhere sitting in a binder, so I'm going to make sure I find that. But I definitely could have been like, this is a junk rare. No one's going to play that one.
Yeah.
The commons, certainly. I bet plenty of those ended up, you know, left on a draft table or something.
Yeah. Well, Chaos Drafts, we got to get more.
Yeah, so then the other version kind of goes more all in on just that. I think that's more the teamer version, is it'll just play that combo, and it has the ability to make a ton of mana with the untapping of Pour Other Pages and stuff, but it's less about that. It's more about the kind of the two-card combo.
Did you talk about Thassa's Oracle and Jace also being part of this combo as well?
Yeah, and they are. And what I don't love about this specific combo right now is the fact that it is beaten by a lot of graveyard hate for the most part. At least these versions of it.
Damping Sphere is also so crushing. Yeah,
Damping Sphere is already good, but the fact that they can also hate it with Graveyard Hate does make it a little bit awkward. For me, I think it's still strong. I think it's still going to be a little bit underestimated, too.
Yeah. So there's two more decks I think we kind of got to talk about, I think, for like the metagame, and then we can move on to some of the other results that we had. So online, the other two results...
Do you want to talk about any of the other combo decks that we have? Because I think there are a few more worth mentioning. You know, there is Ascendancy. I think that that's still a real deck.
Abrupt Decay.
Yeah, I mean, who's playing Abrupt Decay? I mean...
Yeah, Abzan, maybe.
Who's playing Abzan?
Sultai, maybe? I don't know. Yeah, Sultai... Yeah. Those decks have kind of fallen out of favor ever since Oko's left.
Yeah, not completely, but for the most part, and I think we expected that. So in addition to that, there are some graveyard-based combo decks, and I think those are strong, but like I said, I'm a little bit hesitant to go towards that can be so easily hated. So for me, you know, my pet deck I keep talking about is the Kethys combo.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one that got a little bit of strength with Uro and with you know, the Thassa's Oracle being an alt-win con. As well as I think that the Rally decks got some cards this set that may really make it powerful, specifically like the Woe Strider, but there's also some builds of that could be interesting.
Do you remember, maybe this is like dating myself, there used to be like an old TV show called Ghost Rider?
Sure, like after the comic book?
There's like a PBS show about like this ghost that helped kids with words.
Ooh, no.
Yeah, not Ghost Rider, but it's like Ghost Rider with a... W-R-I-T-E-R. Yeah. Anyways, Ghost Rider, Woe Strider, yeah. I guess I kind of think of that whenever I read that card. It looks good.
Let that one sit on people for
Sorry.
A minute.
Cut that out.
Weigh that over.
I'm gonna ask the editor to cut that out.
No, leave that in. I need to to mull over that for a minute and figure out what you're talking about.
You guys can Google search Ghost Rider with a W. But.
All right, so let's get to the next group, and those are the other ones that are going over the top, and that's kind of the ramp decks.
Yeah.
So we're still seeing mono green is good. We're seeing blue green. I think those are mostly it. There's some black green or like Sultai, but I don't think that's very common right now.
Mono green gives you a lot of the utility lands. You pretty much play any colorless land you want in that deck. And the Simic one, you get the Uro in there. It kind of gains you life.
Mm-hmm. As well as, of course, having Krasis as a top end. And I think that these decks have always been strong in Pioneer, you know, kind of the turn three Nissa decks. And there's just people that can't beat turn three Nissa, and that happens all the time.
Yeah. So, and this has got a lot of mana dorks. This is like a lot of turn two, three mana cards are going to be coming into play. But
so anything big that's changed with that deck in your experience, or is it still kind of just it's strong because the meta has made a hole for it?
I mean, only the blue green has really seen any change at all. I think the big changes people have made have probably been with like deciding how many Ugin to run.
Hmm.
You know, depending on the metagame, some people have gone down to two, some people have cut them all together. Some people are just going with like just a straight Eldrazi.
Okay,
so. I'll talk about that a little bit more later when we talk about decks that we want to play. So the last one, like you were talking about earlier, Big Red. You said Big Red had suffered a lot in this current metagame.
Mm-hmm.
And like on the MTGO Pioneer metagame, this is down to like a dismal 3% now.
Yeah, and that's kind of just from this week. I don't think it's gone. I think that it's doing some adaptation that I don't dislike.
So it's going to have to change. Like, people are going, like you said, smaller. They're going faster. It's probably just going to go... It's going to change from big red to red aggro. That's what we'll probably see in the next week or so.
Yes, I have liked the versions of red aggro that are now going towards an actual aggro deck that I've kind of been asking for a lot of the format. You know, we haven't been seeing Monastery Swiftspear being played very much, and that card seems to be back a little bit in those smaller red decks.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that's good for the MTGO Pioneer metagame. Do you want to talk about some results?
Well, I think the one deck we're missing is talking about Dredge. And again, it's getting hated a little bit. I think that the fact that there is Graveyard Hate is part of it.
Yeah.
I think the other part is that it doesn't have the decks it really likes to prey on. I think it did like going around with mono black aggro with the big red aggro, and I think as those get more aggressive, it's a little bit tougher for Dredge. They can't just like prey on it like they did with other mid-range decks.
Yeah.
I think they're still pretty good into Niv-Mizzet. I think they're not unplayable into some of the combo decks that are more mid-range.
It would seem like it's good against mono black too, because black's like, discard everything. I'm like, okay, thank you.
Yeah, it was decent into mono black, but if that's going downhill or getting more aggressive, that makes it a slightly worse matchup.
Yeah. Yeah, so did you want to talk about results?
Yeah, let's go to some results. So you wanted to talk... Let's go over your Japan results, because I know that you are looking forward. You're trying to see what you're going to play in the upcoming GP.
Yeah, so I actually... I mean, I don't know what to talk about first. I thought there was just one big event last weekend. I went to an event in Tokyo at Hallelujah. 181 people. So it was a 1K. I think the winner got like $1,000 or something like that. And like second place was like 400, and everybody else got points. But... I thought that was the only one, but this morning preparing for the show, I saw that there was also a 77-person event in Osaka the same weekend last week, and also a 101-person event in Nagoya last week. So Nagoya, where they're going to be having the Grand Prix. So which one should we talk about first?
Let's talk Nagoya, just because I want you to talk about the winning deck there.
Yeah, so Nagoya, winning deck. So should I just do the top eight first?
Sure, yeah, quick run through the top eight.
So the top eight of Nagoya, 101 people again, was Heart and Scales, mono red, blue-white control, black-green aggro, mono black, blue-red and soul, green devotion, and Niv-Mizzet. This is a pretty sweet top eight, I think. Like as far
Yeah, I think
as,
it is.
As far as like the, how could I say, the diversity of it all.
You know, and that mono green one, even that, I think that fits more into the stompy list that we've kind of seen a little bit of. You know, that green black one as well is kind of a stompy. That one's a bit more mid range, but that hasn't gone away completely. I'm not sure exactly where that fits in the meta. You know, it's kind of. I think that it's in a little bit of an awkward spot in that it plays a very straight game. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, you know,
it's
do
fair,
anything
you mean?
That can interact with quite as much stuff.
It's
kind
of too much of a fair game, maybe, just.
I think that it gets big enough and fast enough that it compete with Niv-Mizzet.
Yeah.
I don't think that it can do as well against combo decks, and that's really where I've had some struggle with the green decks.
So, let's take a quick look at this Hardened Scales. Like, how did this deck win? Nobody's been playing Hardened Scales recently at all. How did this win a 101-person tournament? What is different? Is it just because it's faster and everybody else is playing a slower deck, you think?
I think that's part of it. I do think that... So looking at the specific list, it's not one that's going with dorks. It's going with the one-mana creatures that grow, the Experiment 1 and Pelt Collector.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, this just looks like an aggressive deck that probably went underneath some of the mid-range that we saw.
Yeah, Hangerback Walker, Stonecoil, those are things you always see in Hardened Scales. But Voracious Hydra. I did not expect to see that in there. That's the one card that kind of surprised me.
I mean, it was seeing a lot of play early in the format, but now that...
In Hardened Scales?
Sure, back when we had Hardened Scales as a popular deck.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, were you not following, you know, back when it got a bunch of cards banned out of the mono-green decks?
Well, I mean, everyone was playing mono-green, so no one was playing Hardened Scales.
Well, they were. You know, the Hardened Scales decks were really good, even in mono-green
gotcha,
or green-black.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think another... card that kind of surprises me from the sideboard is Mistcutter Hydra. I haven't seen that in forever.
Yeah, sweet card. I don't know how much blue there was, because that's really what you want to play it in. It's against mono blue, but
yeah.
It's a good card.
And it can't be countered either, right? Yeah, so...
Yeah, it can't be countered. Haste, protection from blue, something like that.
So, yeah, that was the top eight from that event. Very, very diverse. Should we take a quick look at the Osaka one next?
Yeah, let's take a look at that.
So, Osaka. Oh my god.
So, I'll run through the top eight here.
Yeah.
Niv-Mizzet. Mirror match in the finals. Well, not mirror deck, but mirror format. They got an Insol aggro. They've got a blue-green aggro. That one needs a quick check.
It's a Coco. It's a Coco deck. Collected
Oh,
company.
It's a collected company deck.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, that's not quite what I expected. I think it fits in with what we've been talking about in that it's an aggressive deck that has just enough disruption to get under these decks.
Yeah. I mean, you got...
And then we've got another Niv-Mizzet, an Izzet Phoenix, a Black-Red Aggro, and another Niv-Mizzet. So four Niv-Mizzet in the top eight there.
That is insane. Yeah.
Yeah, deck still got legs.
So I kind of want to talk about the Black-Red Aggro deck. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at this yet.
Let me take a look, because you know we've been seeing some of the big red decks splash just a little bit of black. This doesn't look quite like that.
This is playing four Kroxa, Titan of Death's Hunger in the main.
Yeah, it's a card I like. I think it's a good card.
And two Kolaghan's Commands. Mm-hmm. And two Rakdos Returns.
Especially together.
Two Fireballs.
Main deck Rakdos Return. Okay,
that's
so they really want you to disc.
Spicy.
They've even got Engraft.
Yeah, I like this. I like this deck.
This is the kind of deck I love to make and then do terribly with.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that it did well, because I can tell you this is exactly something that I would end up writing up, and you know, maybe it does amazing for testing me and then ends up terrible. That tends to be what happens.
I got a quick question though. I've seen the card Alpine Moon kind of become a little pricey in Japan and online recently. Why is that? This Black-Red deck is playing Alpine Moon 3, actually, in the sideboard.
So that's specifically there for the Lotus Field combo.
Okay. It's the only way
so
for them to
deal
with it.
You put that down, you name Lotus Field, and they can't... Most of the time, the deck just can't win.
I mean, Damping Sphere is the same way, though, right? I mean, they're playing 3 Moon and 3 Sphere. That seems a little...
Yeah, that is a lot. You know, maybe they were particularly afraid of that deck...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't think of much else use for Alpine Moon other than specifically that matchup, so that's probably what it is. Maybe if they're afraid of Nykthos, but I don't think they would bring it in against Nykthos decks.
And another card that they're playing from Theros in this black-red aggro deck is Fartica's Libation. Target opponent sacrifices a creature or sacrifices an enchantment. I don't know if that's actually good, though.
Well, you know, we were talking about how black-red can't answer enchantments. Maybe this lets you do that. It does seem like a lot of mana for that effect, though.
Yeah.
Now, so how do you feel about this overall? Because what I don't love about this deck is that it doesn't have very much as far as card advantage. So you are trading one for one very well, but on card advantage. The other thing that I really don't particularly like is that we're losing a lot of those utility lands that Mono Red or Mono Black got. You know, we're not running any Mutavault in here.
Yeah. So they're playing Castle Lockthwain, which is kind of alright.
They have Lockthwain, they've got some Rummin Up Ruins.
They got Canyon Slow well to cycle for two and you know, draw a card. And they have four Temple of Malice, so you know, that scries you, that kinda helps smooth out your draws a little bit. But yeah,
question here is whether, you know, the black deck was a very good mid-range deck. The red one was a very good mid-range deck. Are you getting enough from those handful of black-red cards that it's worth losing the entire advantage of your mana base?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think this deck looks like it has potential. I don't think this is probably, like, the optimal build. But, you know, I'd like to kind of revisit it in the future. Also, when Kroxa isn't, like, $30 in Japan.
Oh, no, yeah, for one. That, needlessly expensive.
Yeah, it's like, oh my god, Euro's like $46 or $50 right now.
He's real good.
Yeah. Like, in the USA, it's like half that price, right? It's like $35.
Yeah, that's about right. $35 is pretty good. I've seen it more than that, because it's still, availability is low.
And Kroxa says probably like $20, right?
I'd have to check on that one.
Alright, so those are those two tournaments from last weekend. So let's take a look at the one in Tokyo, the 181 person tournament.
yeah. What do you got from there?
So there's a lot of data here. Should we go over like the top 16 deck list?
I would just do a top 8 here. You know, it's a little bit repetitive after that, I think.
Okay. So the top 8 was 5 color Bring to Light, mono green aggro, so Stompy, Mono Black Aggro, Bat Spirits, Big Red, Mono Black Vampires, another Mono Black Aggro deck, and Dimir Inverter combo, the one we were talking about.
Yeah, that was really its first major appearance was there.
So Mono Black seems like it was pretty popular. When I played in this event, I was there. bright and early Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to sign up. But yeah, there was a lot of black decks. A lot of people were playing Thassa's. It was either that or there was a lot of blue decks as well. And a lot of decks playing blue or splashing blue and stuff like that. So I'm not surprised to see all the mono black in the top eight here.
Okay.
So the winner of this event was Big Red, which mm-hmm. is kind of surprising because we were talking about how bad, you know, it's kind of gotten recently. I don't know, is this like...
I mean, yeah, I don't know if we meant bad, but it's hateable. It has competition now.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if this is kind of like the last hurrah. This is like the last gasp of Big Red at, you know, like a big Pioneer tournament. Will it kind of be relegated to, you know, tier 1.5?
I would say people will still be playing. I would go into any tournament here expecting that people will still be on Big Red.
Mm-hmm.
They may do something like splashing a little bit of black. They may look for another color, see what else they can do to make it more viable.
So actually on the Hallelujah's website, you can find this article on the, it's called the Pioneer King Tournament. They also have a metagame breakdown. And I think this is very different from, you know, what we saw in MTGO, like we were talking about. If you're going to a GP this weekend, so the metagame, I don't know if you want to, you can click on that and bring it up if you want to read along with me.
Yeah, I've got it open.
So Azorius Control was 11% of the 181 person field. 20 players were on this. That's kind of surprising. Everyone always says Japanese players love Control. And I guess that is kind of true, especially if you look at these numbers.
But not you.
Yeah, I hate Control. I hate blue. I will begrudgingly play blue, but like in rap. So yeah, Dream Trawler was really good. I faced off against a blue-white deck, actually, that was playing Gearhulks again. I haven't seen Gearhulks at all, you know, in Pioneer recently, just because, you know, Teferi. And,
okay, I like your Hulk.
And this deck was also playing four Summary Dismissal. Instead
that's,
of like
that's a little weird.
Yeah, instead of the other. So like, I mean,
so it was bad.
Spoiler: I was playing Ramp.
Oh yeah.
So he's like, he really exile Eldrazi, counter those activations, and your Ugin Sanctum. What? What? Yeah. So that wasn't fun to play against.
All right.
Next deck that saw the most play in this field was Spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So again, a lot of control, a lot of tempo. People love to play blue. The third biggest one was Lotus Combo. There was a lot of people on Lotus Combo, and Lotus Combo did not do well. I don't think anybody made like top 16 or even like top 32, I think.
Yeah, I didn't see anyone in top 16.
So much hate for Lotus Combo. I beat it three times. I was 3-0 against Lotus Combo.
All right, so you're the one ruining Lotus Combo for everybody.
Yeah, I was playing Gravedigger's Cage, and I was playing three Damping Spheres, and yeah, they couldn't do anything. Big Red, 6% of the field, or about 7% of the field, actually. 12 players on that. Mono Black, another 7%, so 12 players. Mono Green Aggro, another 7%. Niv-Mizzet, there was another... This was 6%, 11 players on that. Then we had Insol with 11 people. Ramp, that was one of me. It was 5%. White Devotion, people were trying out. People weren't as... How could I say? They weren't as brave to try out White Devotion at this event. Not as much as like the other ones.
Yeah, I think online is able to adapt to it slightly quicker. And I think that the very early versions... We're a little shaky. I think that they've gotten better and that they will hopefully continue to improve a little bit.
And another, this is kind of a shock. Five people, so 3% of the field, were on Burrow's Feather.
I mean, that's a fun deck. I think that if people have it, they're going to play it. So I'm not surprised by that entirely.
So they actually have the how these decks performed as well. So if we look down below, there's two people on the Dimir Inverter combo. And both players got 6 or 2 better records. So they both made top 16. One person actually made top 4 with it.
Right, yeah.
Black aggro did really well. Out of the 12 players, four people made top 16, basically. Black vampires did all right. Spirits did all right. Five color Mizzet did all right. Insol did all right. Big Red did all right. Lotus combo, 0%. Nobody won or made like top 8. Ramp didn't do well either. White Devotion and Boros Feather.
Okay.
So they also had 0%.
Taking that data, plus what we've seen, because I think that, you know, the meta has grown since then. I think that the introduction of things like the blue-red inverter deck have already moved the needle on the format.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to
blue,
playing?
Blue-black inverter, you said, right?
Yeah.
You say blue-red or blue-black, I can't remember.
I think it said Dimir.
Yeah.
So what are you looking for your next big tournament?
Like, what am I expecting? Well, I mean, by the time this comes out, it's going
to... What do you think is strong? What are you planning to play if you are?
Well, I was going to say, you know, this isn't going to be useful for anybody doing the Grand Prix this weekend, but we still have an entire season going ahead of, you know, Theros Beyond Death. And I think that's what we're kind of going to be talking about on today's show. Not so much what should you play this weekend, but what should you be building? What should you... you know, be doing with the results from the Grand Prix.
Okay.
So.
Well, what are you doing with the results from the Grand Prix?
So are we going, so just to clarify, you want to talk about what we want to play or what
just
we think the metagame is going to be
like? I want to hear what you want to play. Like, you know, you've got all this data. We've been looking at all this data.
I want to play Ramp.
What's your,
I want to play Ugin. Basically.
Is that I've looked at all the data and this is the answer, or is that just I like playing Ugin?
I see all these colored decks, and I see all these cards that are available to me, and I kind of feel like Ramp can be all of these. I think it just needs a little bit more tweaking, but you know it has all the tools there that are necessary to be all these decks. Ugin absolutely destroys multicolored decks like Niv-Mizzet. The triggers that you get from like Ugin Sanctum and Eldrazi absolutely destroy control. You have tools to beat combo now, which it was weak against. You know, stuff like, you know, Damping Sphere destroys Lotus combo. I like it going forward. The aggro, maybe not so.
You know, it has the results. I think it's one of those, you know, it's just behind a tier one deck. It's certainly putting up results, and I could respect that. I think that has game against a lot of the format.
I think it won a Pioneer PTQ last weekend, and also I think it made like second place in an SCG Open or something the other week as well. So it's not a bad deck. That's what I want to play. That's what I think is good.
For me, I would kind of take the spike stance and say with go with something tempo. I do like the Insol aggro deck. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind seeing what other blue X aggro decks there are available. You know, if I were to name cards more than archetypes, what I'm really waiting for is what deck can play Reflector Mage. Because I feel like we don't have any Reflector Mage decks right now. And they seem like that would be a really, really strong card. So it's good against those top decks, you know. You can get underneath the black decks, you can get underneath the red decks with that and really disrupt their plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful enough that, you know, if somebody tries to stabilize by playing Niv-Miz as a 6-6, mm-hmm. you can bounce that to your hand and they're never going to be able to make back up the tempo loss on board.
Yeah.
And I also think it's good against other tempo decks, you know, especially in Sol. So I want to see when whatever the Reflector Mage deck of the format is, because I don't think there is one right now. So that's what I'm waiting for. The other card type that I'm really interested in right now is sweepers, because those seem to have largely gone away other than the blue-white deck. Mm-hmm. So I wonder who else can play a good sweeper.
Ugin.
There are a few good sweepers in the format.
Ugin.
All right, four mana sweepers. 4 and 5 mana sweepers.
Okay, 4 mana sweepers. There we go. No, I agree. I like spirits. I just won't play spirits because I'm bad at tempo. Agree with you that it's a good deck, that tempo's a good choice for spikes and stuff like that. If I could practice more with it, maybe I'd be good with it. But that would probably
otherwise I would end up playing one of my fun decks. You know, I still really like the Kethis combo, even though I think that there's too much hate for it.
Yeah. I feel like stuff like Is It in Soul, it's powerful, but it can still be inconsistent. You know, and it feels like it's kind of fragile. I don't know if it has a lot of ways to kind of get back if, you know, like it gets 2-for-1. Like if more people play Kolaghan's Command again and you you kill their 1/1 guy and then destroy another artifact that you were going to ensoul. Bam, they're done.
Yeah, definitely. That card really, that deck can't really make up card advantage loss, so that's something that could be good. And, you know, Niv-Mizzet can play that. You know, the black-red deck can maybe play that.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see. We'll see what they can do to answer this. That's kind of where we're at. The question will be what's going forward. We're not oracles on that. We're trying to give our best idea, but for the most part, here we're reviewing what's actually happened.
So what are we going to be... So we talk about what we wanted to play. What are we going to be preparing for? What do we expect to see?
We've talked about all of that. You know, we've said this is what's on the upswing, this is what's on the downswing. I think we've got a pretty good idea here. And we are getting close to 45 minutes, so I was looking towards wrapping up our show if you're happy with that. I think, you know, you and I will definitely be talking about what you're playing this weekend. I'm going to be looking at any time I can play Pioneer, and otherwise I'll be online with the rest of you guys. So once again, if you guys have any questions, if you have anything you liked about the show, anything you want to hear us talk about, anything in the meta that you think is interesting, or you're just bored and you want to talk Pioneer, go ahead and tweet me out. I am at MTG Pioneer, the one and the original, because we are the first Pioneers.
And the best.
That one we have to put the caveat on of it's unproven, but we're going to argue that we're the best, yeah.
Okay,
And Ryan?
Yes, I'm the Japan Hobbyist. You can find me on Twitter at yoshwenky, yoschwenky. You can find my my website at www.thejapanhobbyist.com. I also have a Japanese Magic the Gathering podcast. I talk about Magic in Japan. It's called Code of the Cardboard Samurai. And yeah, if you want to contact me, feel free. You can do that any of those ways through, you know, Twitter or through my website. Facebook group, also a lot of people in there. Did you talk about Discord?
Some Facebook, Discord, Reddit, snail mail, whatever else you want to reach us. We've got a lot of different ways to go. We are on
Spotify iTunes, now, too.
We are on Spotify. We are on, not SoundCloud because they stink, but we are on Podbean, and that's also a great way to reach us. I think it's where we're hosted.
We're trying to figure out Google Play. We're not sure on that yet.
Yeah, I thought we had that going, and then it kind of died out. So we'll maybe be on that, too. If there's anyone out there who's like, man, I want more Pioneer content on Google Play, then we'll do that for you. We'll find that.
We
will find you out there.
And please recommend us to your friends. If you are hungry for Pioneer content, we talk about Pioneer and only Pioneer in our podcast. You know, we don't go off on tangents usually, but please recommend us, subscribe to us, you know, tell your friends.
All right, that brings us to the end of our show. We are the first Pioneers on this podcast. We keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. And signing off.